You're listening to The Building Code. I'm Tom Houghton.
I'm Paul Wirth.
And today on our episode, we've got Alex Barthet joining us from the Lean Zone.
Hello, Alex.
Hey guys. How you doing today?
Doing well. Alex is joining us from sunny Miami.
Jealous. He just showed us a picture out his window. There's boats.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a little cold today. I had to put on a light jacket because it was, you know, 69 degrees.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think here we're at like 40-something, so 35, actually.
And that's good.
I was way off.
That's good.
So, yeah, we'll take it. Springtime.
We'll take it. Yep.
So, Alex, tell us a little bit about yourself, about your business, about your firm that you've got there in Miami, and we'll get underway.
Sure. Again, my name is Alex Barthet. I'm a board-certified construction lawyer here in Miami. We practice just construction law. My father started the firm about 25 years ago. I joined the firm about 20 years ago, and we focus on representing contractors, architects, engineers, subcontractors, developers in construction-related disputes, contract issues. I got a team of 12 lawyers, and it's busy down here. I mean, our skyline is still dotted with tower cranes, which is pretty amazing. It's been going strong for, almost a decade now.
Wow. So what would be your typical client? Commercial, residential,
primarily,
trade, a mix of it all?
Primarily it's commercial, mm-hmm. and primarily it's the tradesperson. It's the contractor, the plumber, the electrician, the roofer. And most of the things we do are help people get paid.
Help them get paid.
That's a big issue. For the trade as a whole, but especially in South Florida, doing work and not getting paid is a epidemic down here.
And you're there to solve that epidemic.
We are. You know, like you, we have a podcast where we talk about construction related issues every week. A nice little tidbit to try to help those in construction in Florida deal with these payment issues.
So what is the number one reason why you don't get paid?
Documentation is usually a big cause. I would say that comes second to, unfortunately, just ending up with either a bad contractor or owner that you signed up with. Unfortunately, I mean, the best people you want to work for are people that, you know, may have you sign a contract that has lots of things in it, but then it goes in a drawer and people work on relationships, handshakes, doing the right thing. Problem solvers. You know, it's never very good when you're in a dispute and you're forced to take out the contract because then you know, wow, you know, I probably didn't make the right decision about the person I'm dealing with if they're starting to read, you know, page 37, paragraph 22 to me at a meeting.
Mm-hmm. So are most projects commercial or residential? Do most GCs have their subcontractors sign a contract each job? Or is that a purchase order? Is it a full contract? Or what does it look like?
It's an interesting question because I would tell you over the last decade, we've seen a trend where in the past, every contract was a one-off. So if I'm a GC and I hire a plumber, I have them sign a contract. What we've seen over the last 10 years is a migration to a master agreement and purchase orders / work orders. Yeah, not even for the year, just like this is it. This is my master agreement with you. It has no job. You're not tied to any job, but what you do is you get all the terms and conditions out of the way, and then the work order is just price, scope, and time.
Right.
That's kind of smart. It's like just like a huge almost like umbrella. For the whole term.
Yeah. We have purchase orders in Builder Trend, and I think a lot of people use it that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do typically your clients, have they been paid at all? Or are they taking partial payments throughout the job and they just the final payment or the final agreed to dollar amount is not? Is that what it is? Or what's the dispute typically?
Yeah, usually it's two pieces that come at the end. One is unexecuted change orders, you know, change order work that's been done, not properly fully approved and paid for. And it may not be every change order, but it may be some of them. Those drag out to the end of the job, and then the last piece is retainage, you know, the last 10% of the job being held during the course of the job. And that's usually where the fight starts as you get close to the end of the job. So, you know, we'll have clients that, you know, we represent a drywall contractor. On one job, he's owed $1.5 million. On another job, he's owed $1.2 million. And that's made up primarily of unapproved change orders and unpaid retainage.
Yeah, I was going to make that point. In residential construction, change orders could be like $500. We're not talking that kind of money in commercial, right? Change orders can add up to a lot of money.
Yes, yes. So it may be $500 a unit times 180 units in a building.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it adds up quickly. You know, and in South Florida particularly, we have a lot of condominiums. So that's where a lot of big dollar, big ticket commercial work happens.
They
build a building.
Yeah. What can a contractor do as it relates to change orders specifically during the job to mitigate that not being paid at the end of the job?
So we find that the biggest problem that occurs is what I would call the nice guy syndrome, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, we'll
I
do
don't want to rock the boat. Yeah. You know, we'll get it dealt with later. So what they don't do is they don't follow the contract. And typically these contracts are pretty simple. If someone wants to do change order work, then they need to sign a change order. And if they don't sign a change order, you're not supposed to do the work unless they direct you under what's in most of these contracts called a change directive, which is standard provisions that exist in an AIA contract, right? So a change directive is, oh, you don't want to do it? Well, I'm going to instruct you to do it, and then we'll agree on a price and time, later. Because most of these contracts, you still have to do change order work. You can't not do change order work. Most commercial contracts. So,
is there any guideline for that? That doesn't seem very fair to me. To the subcontractor, is there any guideline for pricing then? Like, hey, you're going to do it no matter what, but we'll agree to price later. What if that price is a dollar? Like, I mean?
Right. So what? Yes, absolutely. So many contracts have a unit price schedule in them.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And if not, then it usually says something like your actual cost for that change order work plus an agreed markup. Maybe it's 2, right. 3, 5, 10%, but that's in the contract. Mm-hmm. The importance about that is that then you don't even fight about whether it's a change order because they've directed you to do it as a change order. You're just arguing about the price. Mm-hmm. What we see a lot of the dispute happen is contractors or owners come back and say, no, that was in your scope. It wasn't a change. It was reasonably inferable from the contract documents. Or you didn't read note 7 on page P4 of the plans. And that's usually the pushback that we see. But I would say that if contractors can focus on forcing the contractor or contractors with the owner to make sure that they don't just roll over early on when the change order is proposed, that makes a big difference in setting the tone for the rest of the job.
Right, setting that precedence early.
That's correct. Really good advice. As it pertains to contractors, what are some other advice that you can recommend to avoid them having to deal with other legal issues and that end up, you know, contacting you then?
I mentioned it early on. That's documentation. Documentation is key. I mean, using programs like yours makes a big difference. I have had clients that have had success in their case because they use easy-to-use programs like yours, but they actually use them to document that which is happening on the job. And those cases always turn up better than those cases where I had a client who his entire case was his phone. By the way, this is a $1 million case, and it was all in his phone. He said, don't worry, Alex, I got everything on I got all the instructions via text message. I've saved everything in pictures on my phone. And I'm thinking, this is not going to end well. So we had the meeting, and he started scrolling through his phone and to go back to show me some of these text messages. And he had a setting on his phone that everything after, I think it was 6 months, would just automatically delete. So he kind of got a hard stop at about 6 months back, and like it was all gone because there was nothing there.
Right.
And that's just not the way to run a small, medium, or large size construction company. You need more robust documentation. So number one is documentation, for sure, during the course of the job, and particularly in your contract. You know, have your contract, spend a few hundred dollars, maybe $1,000, and have your contract reviewed by a construction lawyer before you sign it.
I'd like to talk about that. What is your opinion on the industry's appetite for somebody like you? Are you perceived as somebody like that's a requirement when you're in construction, or a nuisance, or an extravagance? Like, what do people utilize lawyers as much as they should in construction?
You know, I would tell you it's the market that probably dictates a lot of that. I'll tell you a story. We represent a national electrical contractor who has an office here in South Florida, mm-hmm. as well as offices across the country. The local president retired, so they sent the president from the Virginia office to come, which was running the Northeast, which was actually a bigger office than the local office, sent him down here to run this office. We had been representing them for so long, almost from the beginning of the firm. I said, you know what, let me go over, let me meet him. I brought him a bottle of scotch. I brought him a book on Miami. And I said, you know, you're probably going to call me a lot as you deal with issues. He says, my operation in Virginia was twice the size of this one. I would be, if I talked to my lawyer up there once every 2 years, it was a lot. I said, South Florida is a different place. 2 weeks later, he called me. He's like, this is the Wild West down here. And lo and behold, you know, every week he would call me with some issue. So I would tell you, at least in my opinion, in South Florida, most everyone recognizes that you're going to need a construction lawyer.
So let me ask you a question. Somebody who's starting up their construction business, maybe they've been going for a little while and they don't have a construction lawyer, what would your recommendation be? What's the best way to find a good construction lawyer like yourself?
So I recommend that you get, just like it's the same advice that you get about your banker. Don't wait till you need the money to go get a loan and a credit line. You know, get it before you need it. The same thing is with your lawyer. Rarely, but we have clients that come to us and they say, I don't have anything, but I may need something, so I wanted to meet you and hire you and just kind of have you on the team if something were to happen. So I would recommend that to people.
Is that a retainer? That's a word I heard on Good Will Hunting for the first time. So retainer. What is that? Is that what they?
Yeah. So what we do is, you know, every lawyer is a little different. Mm-hmm. But what we do is we have new clients sign an engagement agreement, which is a few pages long. It outlines the attorney-client relationship. That's pretty standard. Mm-hmm. And then we have them pay a retainer, which is just some amount of money that sits in our trust account. So yeah, you were right.
I was right.
Bonus points for Paul there. Maybe we should talk about trouble, like how to stay out of trouble, right?
Review the plans and specifications for the site and manage the expectations of whoever you're hiring. You know, one of the things we tell clients to do all the time is don't just focus on what's in your scope, but spend time putting in exclusions or exceptions in your scope of work. My price does not include this. Right, I'm not doing these things. Sometimes I find clients who are afraid to do that. They think, oh, well, you know, I'm going to offend someone. I'm not going to get the job. But what it usually does is it starts a conversation so that you don't have a surprise at the end, right?
Is it because a lot of times a subcontractor is trying to get the business and like sort of whatever it takes, I'll do that job? Is that sort of why you end up at the end of a job in some trouble?
Yes.
Yeah.
Some of our most successful clients that are the most profitable and use us the least are more discriminating in the work that they take and they're just not interested in taking any work. They want to take the right work with the right clients. I mean, we have clients that don't use us very much, but because we're so entrenched in the local market, they pick up the phone and they call us and they say, "Hey, Alex, tell me, what do you know about so-and-so? You know, they're trying to have me bid their work, and, you know, I want to know about them before I start giving them numbers."
Right. Mm-hmm. Is the reverse of that true as well from the GC side, them being particular about who they contract with?
Yes. You know, if a contractor gives a hard bid on a number and their sub drops the ball on them, they own that, and they'll own all of the extra costs associated with a sub that went bad. So they need to be very, very careful about the numbers that they carry. And what we see that they do sometimes is get a payment and performance bond from subs where they don't really trust either them or their number as a guarantee that if they don't perform, there's some recourse. So I tell that to clients as well, the subs that we represent. You know, if you bid a job and unfortunately, you know, you learn a little late that your number may not be good, but you gave a bond, you're on the hook.
So, yeah, you'll figure it out some way.
Yeah, you better.
So would you recommend, or do you recommend with contractors that they sort of build in an amount of like loss every year? So like retail stores.
Sure.
They build in amount of theft every year, right?
They do.
There's a like term for that. I don't know what it is. But would you, I mean, because it's so prevalent in construction, do you recommend a drywall company or a GC going like, "Hey, you're going to do work and not get paid X amount per year. Like, just be ready for that." Is that common?
I think the more common is that what we tell people is you should build in legal as a component part of your cost.
That's a plug for you.
Right?
Hey, it's a good plug.
I'm not saying you're wrong. But yeah, that was good. That was good. I'm in sales. That was a good.
So I've, you know, there are clients that come to us and they say, you know, it'll cost $1,000 for us to review their contract. And so I didn't have it in my numbers.
Right. Yeah.
Well, then your numbers are wrong, because unless you're going to read this 30-page contract that's full of legalese and understand it yourself, you're going to have a professional do it. I mean, you're accounting for your CPA, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, you're going to pay a CPA for your taxes or audit for bonding. You know, legal should be no different, whether you want to carry it by job or some number at the end of the year.
Yeah, just a yearly overhead. So maybe for the listeners, in your yearly budget, account for legal fees, but also software. Same thing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely. Good plug. I like
two
that.
Shameless plugs, apparently. What's happening? We're running out of time here. Let's wrap this up. Let's talk a little bit more about the Lean Zone. So you have a website. You have an app. You have a podcast. You have videos on there. One of your video titles I definitely wanted to watch, and it was called "What? I Can Be Sued 13 Years After I Finish a Project." That's a good tagline.
Yeah, that's you like that?
Yeah, I did. That's good.
And I came up with that without the help of someone like Brooke.
Oh, see, there you
Producer
go.
Producer Brooke
got a shout out.
Nice.
She's beaming right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does that mean? There's a story behind that, right?
Yeah, well, so what happens is in the state of Florida, you can be sued. The old rule used to be 15 years after a job. Then they changed it about 10 years ago, and they moved it to 10 years. And now they changed it again, and they are now slowly having it creep up again so that, you know, we have clients, and they're like, "I don't even have my records. How is it that I can get sued so late after the end of the job?" And the answer is, in Florida, for construction defects, the answer is, yeah.
So having records of everything is really important, obviously.
Yes, record retention, everything in an organized location by project, photos,
sounds
absolutely
like,
critical.
I'm familiar with.
Sounds like a program you're familiar with, Paul.
Sounds like Builder Trend.
It does sound like Builder Trend.
Right. On the residential side,
yeah.
You know, the tips are the same, even though the values may be smaller. Mm-hmm. Documentation remains absolutely critical. I tell clients, you should be taking pictures of your job site at least every week. And by the way, not just of the areas in the property, but what's happening around the property. You know, so for example, if you're a residential contractor and, you know, when's the last time you took a picture of the front of the house, the back of the house? Because someone, you know, the owner says, hey, look, this tree got hit by somebody. Well, it wasn't me. Look, here are the pictures. We've had a lot of clients get out of trouble because they can produce a picture and it shuts up an owner pretty fast. So documentation's key. Picking the right subs, having a cadre of subs that trust you, that you pay, so that, you know, they will stand with you when the work, when the project may not be going well. And then be very careful about the people that you work for, making sure that ideally they give you a little bit of money in advance. In Florida, there are certain rules that prevent you from taking too much money in advance. Typically anything more than 10% creates some issues mm-hmm. if you take that in advance. Mm-hmm. There's ways to do it, but you just have to be careful. And no matter how upset you get, be very careful about walking off a job. That's both residential and commercial, because when you decide, you know what, I'm done, I'm going to leave, you potentially give the owner the right to hire someone else to finish your work. And depending on how your contract is written, you may be liable for those additional costs, right? So if you had $50,000 left to finish the job and then you get up and leave and someone decides later, some judge, that you shouldn't have left when you didn't have the legal right to leave, and they now spent $75,000 to do what you caught, what you thought would cost 50, you're going to have to write them a check for that extra 25. So we always tell clients, you know, calm down, talk to a lawyer, have them read your contract if they didn't read it at the beginning, understand your rights before you take a very drastic move during the course of construction, especially if that means picking up your stuff and walking off the job.
So quick takeaway, take 10 minutes, just a simple takeaway, take 10 minutes every week and take like photos around the property
yes.
and in the property.
Yeah.
That's an easy one.
That's great.
Yeah. Good.
Okay, Alex, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. Again, check out the show notes so that way you'll see a link to Alex's website, theleanzone.com. You'll also see links to his podcast on there, to the app that he has as well, and just more information about the show today, anything that we talked about in detail. So check out our show notes page at buildertrend.com/podcast. Thank you again, Alex, for joining us.
What is the Lean Zone? Final question. Like, what is that? Like,
the Lean Zone is yeah. a place where we publish free forms you can download, videos you can watch, articles you can read, and the podcast. We just give away information. Our goal is to make those that deal with construction in South Florida smarter and less prone to having to need a lawyer by giving them the information that many lawyers have locked up in their head.
Mm-hmm.
That's so awesome.
If you don't need a lawyer, that's good. But if you do need one, call Alex.
It's true. Or I check like out the Lean Zone.
Right?
That's a good tagline.
That was good. All right, great.
All right, thanks again, Alex.
Thank you.
No, thank you, guys.
What a great conversation we had with Alex there.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I think it pertains to a lot of what our clients probably should be doing.
Yeah.
It, like he said, maybe you don't think of that when you do your annual budget. Maybe you don't do an annual budget at all.
Maybe you need to start.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
For sure. I probably should.
Probably should. We have a tool for that.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah. But it should be a part of it, right?
Definitely. And I love that he's just out there with his Lean Zone website and all those other resources he has, just sharing the information. Mm-hmm. So that way, if you want to kind of like tiptoe into this, you can go check out their website for more information. And I would highly recommend it. There's some pretty interesting stuff on there.
Yeah, and a plug for Build the Trend, because people don't know this. Some people don't know this. We actually have lien waivers built in our product.
Yeah.
And it's inside of the purchase orders feature. So if you don't use purchase orders, you may not know this, but we actually have electronic lien waivers you can send out to your subs and vendors.
They can sign right there on the mobile app or on their computer or whatever.
If you don't know that, contact your coach.
You should.
You may have caught this. He said the word cadre in there. Had no idea what that meant.
Yeah. check out the show notes for the definition.
So we're going to do show notes on the word cadre.
Yep.
I was too embarrassed to say I didn't know. He's a That's lawyer. Okay. He's a lawyer. It's intimidating.
It's true. Yeah. He's a smart guy. Yeah. So, all right. Thanks so much for listening to The Building Code. Make sure you check out our show notes page. Also, don't forget to subscribe and rate our podcast. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Building Code.
Appreciate you.